I have just been idly thinking recently. I should move abroad. You know, that'd be fun. Just sort of passing the time, thinking about it as I enjoy
Yes.
my 24-ounce porterhouse steaks that I got at the Amazon Treasure Truck on Saturday. Very delicious. I don't know how much 24 ounces is over there, but man, it's a big steak. It's a lot of meat. And it comes on a T-bone. I was funny. I was eating it. You know, I grew up here in Austin eating steak with my grandfather, who, come to think of it, died at kind of a early age. But whatever. We used to eat steak all the time, and the porterhouse, so-called porterhouse that I got, is what I would expect a T-bone to look like. And I had gotten a T-bone a couple weeks ago, and it was very small. So maybe what I grew up eating was porterhouse steaks, which would explain a lot. But I know you don't eat steaks, so I'm going on about
No. Well,
steaks.
as you say, you if you while you were growing up in Austin eating steak, I was growing up in London not eating steak. So I feel we really share a lot of experience here.
Now this reminds me before we get we'll as they say circle back to our topic. Although as far as I'm concerned, what I've been told, I forget if I've covered this on previous conversations of ours, but I've been told that I basically speak in circles. So obviously we'll get back there. That's the good thing about my conversational style is eventually
That's
we'll go by the same
yeah,
thing.
it's one of the many things I love about you.
That's right. There is no stack if you just keep infinitely wondering. Eventually everything pops. But that's right. So, you know, my mother has a Dutch friend visiting, and my mother is of the age now where you know, they go on trips and then they pick up these friends. They kind of pick up friends like lint on a sweater, and but in a good way. And so she has this Dutch friend who's over here now, this Dutch single lady who my mother keeps telling me the Dutch lady really wants to meet cowboys who are younger than her because she doesn't want to date men her own age, which is fine. Yes. So, I, you know, Godspeed there or whatever it is they worship over in the Netherlands. You know,
Cheese.
may your city not be underwater, I guess. Is that a common Dutch saying? Yeah, definitely. And cheese. So they went to buy some chorizo, which, you know, our international listeners will say they bought some sausage, but chorizo around here means a particular thing. It's like I wouldn't say highly, but it's a very spiced, very fatty sausage that commonly you cook in eggs. You sort of scramble in eggs, and it's very red. And I guess maybe if you're having tapas over there, or tapas, if you're having tapas over in Spain, they have that kind of like really fatty red sausage thing. I don't know. And she told me, she asked if I, my mother asked me if she had ever heard of someone boiling chorizo. And she said, it's the Dutch way. And so now I'm pretty sure that the only way they cook food in Dutch land is boiling it. That's what I'm going to remember forever.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Dutch food. It's probably I think I might be genetically suited to it. Dutch and Northern French and anything that's stodgy, really heavy stuff.
Oh yeah. Do they have a lot of
Yeah,
potatoes and
love it.
bread and things like that?
Oh yeah,
What constitutes
fantastic.
a Dutch food?
Yeah, all of that, what you just said.
That's right. And more. They'll have a layer of bread and then a gravy and then a layer of bread. Basically, they call that a Dutch lasagna, and then maybe some meat in there. Yeah.
We've completely alienated any future Dutch listener here.
Oh, the Dutch are great. They have a good sense of humor about themselves. Almost,
Oh yeah.
almost. You know, they're all into it. I was told also if you wanted to move abroad, circling back to our topic, that Amsterdam's a great place to live. But what I wanted to ask you is what's the deal with London? Let's say I got a family, you know, and I'm here too, hopefully. We might have let's say a mid-sized dog. Like
Oh,
how's
I
London going to
forgot the
work
dog.
out? How do I even conceptualize this? I assume I'm not going to go live on Piccadilly Circus or whatever.
No,
I don't really
no.
know what a circus is, but what am I going to do? What am I going to look for? Am I going to have a good time, as they say?
Having a good time is possible. It is definitely possible.
All right, I'm gonna check that off my list here. Hold on. Yeah. Let me get out my Apple Pencil.
Having a very bad time is also an option.
Mm.
So you might want to bear that in mind. This notional move. Have you ever done anything like this before?
I have never lived outside, literally, the city limits of Austin. I live, if you were to walk across the major highway outside of my neighborhood, you would cross the city limits of Austin. And I have, as one of my compatriots used to say, I have traveled extensively in Concord. But, you know, I've never really lived outside of Austin. No. My wife used to live in Houston and Montana briefly, and she lived in D.C. for a summer and then New York. So she's, you know, left the state.
Yeah. So she's going to be fine.
Exactly.
And, you know, how long is this expected to be? Oh.
Yeah, the key to a podcast is always unmuting the microphone.
I see.
I think let's write that down in our topic list. One day we should have a discussion about managing our backlog, but I'm just going to make one of our topics podcast tip. Unmute
you
the mic.
You know all the special podcast science.
Yeah. That's right.
Unmute, you say.
So let's see. I'm going to do a slight edit. It'll be as if it never happened. Anyhow, I was thinking, you know, as you know, like 2 years would be a good amount of time, right? Because I figure if it's a year, it's going to take me that long just to figure out where to get good tortillas, right?
Yeah.
But then the second year, I'm be like, fuck, I know where to get tortillas. I'm the cock of the walk around here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so imagine this is London then that this move is going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's as long as someone else is paying most of the bills, it may be bearable.
Mm.
That's all you need to know, really.
I mean, now I feel like this is a broader topic. I've asked you about London, but I think you gave me the answer to life.
Yes, I did.
That's right. I think we're both in awe of your trenchant insight there. What do you think about the word trenchant?
Yeah. So what? I keep getting it mixed up with other words. There's a couple of words. There's more. It's probably it's definitely my age. There are more and more words I'm having difficulty with, like sanguine and trenchant.
Oh yeah.
Sanguine. And I got mixed up with oblong recently.
Oh.
And I learned at 45. Yeah, exactly. I was mixing up oblong and something else. I thought it was like rectangular, but like with the edges smudged off. But apparently it's something else. Apparently it's more like just normal rectangular.
Really?
So is there anything in particular? Who knows?
I thought oblong was like if you took a picture of an egg and displayed it on the wrong type of aspect ratio. It was like a stretched out egg. But you're telling me oblong is like a trapezoid situation.
You know what? Absolutely no one is shouting at their podcast player now. No one cares about this. Two people who don't know what an egg looks like. So London.
Yes. Thank you.
London, is there anything in particular that I can mislead you about with regards to London?
Let me answer your question with the answer to another question, which is here are the things people say about London. Occasionally, I'll start with as I like to call it, the reverse shit sandwich. Right. That's my own joke. I messed up. I like to call it the open faced reverse shit sandwich. And that's to say,
nice.
So the positive things people say are London is great. There's a lot of culture here. Robert Brooke lives there. You know, it's easy to avoid James Governor. like all sorts of things that people say is good about London. And you know, they're like, you can go to Scotland and look at that. There's just sort of like, it's just like, there's like culture everywhere. Now, of course, aside from a problem with, you know, the way people spell color and virtualization and stuff, you know, there's also a common language. So I've been told, that people speak.
Yeah.
Now, there were some jokesters, or I think perhaps people who are not native English speakers, who said it was hard to understand the English, which I don't know. I can understand Michael Caine when he talks, so I think I'll do fine. Like he seems to be the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
I've watched a lot of Fireman Sam, so yeah. Maybe I could even do well and down there.
Well, he's Welsh.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, they do dub it into English. I don't know if you can dub a cartoon, but yeah. One day we'll have to put that on the list. What is Wales?
Fireman Sam.
Yeah, we'll have to get your son to come on and he can explain Wales to me. You know, and I'm happy.
First the Dutch, and now this.
I'm happy to explain the idiosyncratic regions of America, of which we have a veritable cornucopia. There's many discussion topics there. So overall, people are like, you know, especially if you're an American, you go to England. I mean, you go to London, it's fine, it's great. Everyone speaks the language. You know, they have tomatoes with their breakfast. It's great, right? And then business wise, you know, things seem to be, despite whatever is going on with you know, the EU, it seems like the consensus is that London is at least in my line of work, like a pretty essential business hub, if not one of the better ones or best ones. Just got a lot of stuff going on there in the city, as The Economist seems to call it. So then you go through the bread of the reverse open face shit sandwich. And everyone's like, well, first of all, listen, I'm just recounting what people have said. I do not believe this. But to summarize, they're like, here are the most worst white people in the world. One, the French. And everyone's like, yes, the French. The French cannot stand people and we cannot stand them. So they're just like, everyone except maybe even the French agree, but everyone agrees French no good, right? Second, I think they're like, well, second place is a tie between the Americans and the British. And so I found that basically, if you're not American or British, you think the Americans and British are at worst like buffoons. Like you ever read that Terry Pratchett book where there's like the Japanese photographer who's running around? It's sort of like that kind of buffoonery happening. And
yes.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really. That's such a weird concept that some other culture would be so offensive that you wouldn't like them. I mean, they might be confusing and like disturbing, but it's just like, I don't know. That's just the way they are. They like hamburgers and shit, and they talk really loud, and they think it's insane that you live in a shoebox. What do you want?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I was to think of this another way around, if someone was to say to me, look, you've got to relocate to Austin for 2 years, the approach that I would want to take is just a kind of like immersion for 2 years. And yeah, I'd still be me. I'd still have this strange accent. I'd still be, you know, probably not eating steak. But your advice would probably be just relax, just go there. You want to enjoy yourself. You don't want to alienate yourself from the people around you. You want to be kind of, I think there's this feeling that people who move overseas have a kind of weird expat feeling to them. And all the people around them in the new place they've moved to often want to say, hey, look, you need to calm down. There's lots of stuff here. You can enjoy it over years and years and years. And you can still go away and be who you are, where you are.
Yes.
So there's that kind of relaxing into the kind of middle brownness of the country.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking I'm going to, you know, live as I lived in London.
Yeah.
Because that would be hard and it would be kind of painful and eventually kind of boring because you wouldn't really be in the place you were.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's a very comforting idea. That's sort of like what you would want the immigration experience to be anywhere is like, you know, you come over and it's like, hey, how's it going? You should just calm down. Things will be cool.
Yeah.
You do you. And here's a steak.
Yeah.
But so then I'm going on and on, but let me summarize. The other complaints about London are basically that it's big, expensive, and dirty. Dirty is my gross summarization, no pun intended, but my all-in summarization of what people are saying. But I what I've written in my head is I imagine if I were to ask someone, given my budget, right, I want to move to Manhattan with my family. Is that a good idea or not? And everyone would pretty much say like, well, if you want to live in a shoebox and live in the big giant city. So I don't know. That's what people, again, there are some people who say great things, but pretty much everyone else is like, nope, London last on the list. Well, last on the list is Paris, but London is last on the list of places you should move. So I ask you, who lives in London with a family, what's the deal with that assessment?
Well, it's awful. It's very hard. But this is the thing, you know, big. Yeah, it is big. But I've spent some time in Los Angeles. That's also big, but it's big with like motorways and stuff. London's big, but it's big in a good way. And I think, at least, I'm hugely prejudiced, of course, but. What was the other one? Expensive. Yeah, it is expensive. But again, there's a great deal of London which isn't that expensive. I mean, the more you go out of the centre, there is loads to see, and which isn't necessarily that expensive, apart from housing and some of the travel. Dirty. I'm going to say it's not that bad. I mean, there are places in London, which are hardly Zurich, but there's places everywhere which aren't Zurich.
There is
a lot there, and it's interesting that you were talking about particularly cultural stuff, because there's a lot there, but there's a lot of stuff which isn't Leicester Square, which isn't Trafalgar Square, which isn't, you know, the National Gallery or something like that. Again, if I was in Austin and asking you would probably point me to places which weren't on any tourist map, weren't really big places that everyone visited. And, you know, once you relax into those situations, you probably can have a really good time.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And you know, I think one of the things that kind of fits into this general pattern of relaxing and misconceptions is, and I know this to be the fact from just flanarding about, to use another funny word, when I've been in London, is, you know, there's a perception like, oh, there's no green space or anything. It's just all like big old city. But in fact, there's tons of like parks and even trees in those parks in London. Like, I remember last time I was there when I among other things, had dinner with you and your lovely family there, and your would you call that a house?
Almost.
That's right. Like, what, you probably know which park. I guess it's Hyde Park. Like, I went to Paddington Station and then walked through the park that was right there. And it was a big ass park. You could even like be alone if you wanted to in the woods.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, for not that much money, you can get a train, you can get out of London, 45 minutes, something like that. You really can be out in the countryside, you know, punching cows, the whole lot.
Punching cows. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to get one of those tweed jackets with a sweater vest underneath, right? Is that
you're going to fit right in?
I have a broken shotgun tucked underneath my arm, or yeah, I don't. I think I hire someone to hold that, right? Isn't that how it works?
Again, if I was visiting Austin, the things I imagine the things that you would point me to are probably more likely to be people than things.
Yes. That's right.
And again, if you are going to move to, you know, London or Paris or Amsterdam or something like that, if you've got a hard out of 2 years, that's a different way of living, really. You know, whatever happens, you just think to yourself, I'm out of this joint in 2 years. So who cares?
That's right. We don't even need to pay for garbage collection. Yeah, just put it in that room back there.
Yeah. I think genuinely, if you go into something, if one goes into something like this thinking, I'm gonna really enjoy this place and all of these people for 2 years, knowing that the good stuff I'm gonna really take advantage of, and the bad stuff I can, you know, keep a lid on, I can bear it. And I think the bad stuff isn't gonna be terrible. It's just gonna be, as you say, really weird. Yeah. It's gonna be, why do they do this here? This is strange. Why can't I get a proper whatever? Yeah. And there are going to be things which you just are not going to be able to get.
Yeah. But you know, so it's, I mean, that sounds correct. And I think you're analogizing back to the what you would have someone do here in Austin or wherever someone's domicile might be. That makes sense. So like, what's the situation? Like, let's say, you know, what's the situation with like kids? Like, what do they do for schools over there? Do they, does that work out well, or do you go to private schools or public ones, or what do they do?
That is very, very mixed here. There is a huge range, even in London. And there's, you know, there is, again, the words we use are pretty strange, but there's basically school that you have to pay for and school that you don't have to pay for. Mm. School that you don't have to pay for is basically pay for out of central taxation, but there's all sorts of crazy arrangements in between. And again, if you're going to be here for 2 years, I don't quite know how that would be arranged, but yes, it would be possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And do they teach them about the Texas Revolution in school?
American, right?
That's right. That's right.
They're going to end up knowing about Charlemagne or something.
Ah, Charlemagne. Finally, someone can explain that to me. And then the whole, I mean, I think I tried to have you and your son explain it to me, but you got like the Vikings, and then there's the not French, who are the Normans. And then over there, you got Ireland, and then whatever was on the island in the first place. And then all of a sudden the Dutch or something. It's very confusing. I don't.
Again, somewhere, if you are somewhere like London for 2 years, mm-hmm. or even 1 year, frankly, something like going to stay in the Republic of Ireland for a week is doable. You know, you can literally get on a plane and go there and do that. Mm-hmm. And as you say, going to Scotland, you can get a train to Scotland and you can just stay there for a couple of nights. And it's a really nice place. Yeah. And
it seems like it.
See. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. So you're saying, though you may be biased, it's fine. It'll be great.
Yeah. I think that the time limit thing, the time edges are the most important thing to think about. And also that thing of enjoying what the place is and having to put aside certain things, which just, it really is going to be a case of, this does not make sense.
No, you keep mentioning that, so it's sort of begging the question. What are those things? What are the things that don't make sense?
You can imagine someone like me in Austin standing next to you in like Costco and looking at you with a look on my face saying, what are you talking about, Michael? Why don't they sell these things? Mm. And you look at me and saying, what are you talking about? Of course we don't sell those things. Nobody buys those things here. That's it. But there's no option.
So it's not so much, it's not so much like, some sort of like, I don't know, cultural sort of thing, so much as like an availability of goods or something that is just like not available or done in a different way. Like, you know, the example I think Americans often, experience is apparently once you leave the border of the United States, it is not economically viable to give free refills on drinks.
Apparently not.
That's right. There's something about our GDP that allows us to give refills on drinks, but not abroad. So, I mean, is that the kind of small but impactful thing?
Yeah, those kind of things. And I honestly think it's more kind of medium level social stuff of how much do I tip these people? Mm. And the answer, what is tipping? What are you talking about?
Right.
Or it doesn't really matter that much. But those things are, you know, after the first 9 months of excruciating embarrassment, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what would you think? I'll ask, maybe we'll pick another topic to spend the rest of our time on, but just a few more questions. What would you think of, like, so I've got a family of four, right? Two adults and two kids. Like, what would you say the housing expectation would be like? Like, you have a two bedroom house? Is that right?
Yeah, kind of one and a half, really. Again, this is somewhere where the location of where you are is going to make a huge difference. Mm. And again, that 2 years thing of if you're coming with other people, and you're probably going to have to say to them, look, whatever you look at is going to feel small. It's always going to feel small, particularly anywhere within the middle of London. But it depending on what someone's notional budget is, it is possible, particularly for that time length.
And is it common that you live like in the suburbs? Is that a word y'all even have over there?
Yeah, definitely. People often, there's a lot more kind of working from home stuff here now than there was in the past, or working, you know, you go into an office 2 days a week or 3 days a week.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm talking from a position of massive privilege there.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And then things are not so expensive out in the suburbs, and you just like, you can just hop on a train or something and go.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's very variable, but, and again, I am an actual Londoner. I was born here. I've lived here all my life. I actually like the place. I mean, there are lots of people who don't, and they have very good reason to sometimes, but yeah, it is doable. I think that the 2 years thing, is the key, really. If I was going to move to Paris, and I might think to myself, how am I going to live like this? Well, for 2 years, I can live like this. I'm making it sound like awful. It's not like prison.
No. You're just being often, but I mean, being honest, but I think, you know, it's very similar. Like, you know, I'm a native Austinite, as we say. So like, of course you should move here.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah, again, I can imagine you saying to someone, yeah, don't worry about those things. These things are fine. I think you'd enjoy those things, and talk to these people here and you'll have a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I tell people is like, when you come here to figure out if you like it, you should come here in, like, let's say October or March. Just don't come in August.
Yes. And the thing is, particularly on the kind of work business side, I think whether you were living in Paris or London or Austin or Singapore or wherever it was, you can work your fingers to the bone and have a terrible time anywhere you are. And similarly, you can relax into the place and have a great time or have an okay time and just decide, I'm going to enjoy this place. I'm going to make the best of it. It's going to be fine. And you know, again, you've got that two year out, and I think most things are going to be bearable for that amount of time.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if this idle speculation goes on. We'll have to ask for more tips. Maybe some good weekend trip things that you bring your spouse to, as it were. So you have a little bit more time, right? We can cover another. So here's you just popped another idea into my head, which I think is a fertile ground for thinking out loud. And that is, you know, one of the things you kept coming back to is like, it's just 2 years, right? Which implies this whole methodology of thinking and approach to how you do things, which I don't know what to call it, but it's almost the here's the phrases that come to mind when I'm trying to think of it: risk management and scenario planning. That's a weird way to say scenario, which is sort of like, it's sort of like a, what would you call it? A proactively optimistic sunk cost.
Yeah.
you're sort of like, yeah, even if this is terrible, it's only going to be for 2 years. So there's the risk of that, but the risk is hedged that it will end in, let's see if I can do math, 700 and some odd days in two years. So, you know, there's that. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And on the other hand, the benefit could potentially be huge, right? Like, and so I do this sort of like meatware in my head risk management analysis, and it's probably fine, right? Like, we should just go for it. And I find that I like to think that I think in this kind of mindset, right? Like doing scenario planning. So there's that. Like, one, is this an actual type of, as I'm laying out the topic here, an actual type of thinking that people have? And then two, I was recently talking with someone, and I realized in discussing like how I sort of, I don't know, that it's almost, it can be a disadvantage where someone might suggest doing something, right? And I will just immediately think about all the work involved and the way that everything could go bad and then not want to do it. Like moving.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so, yeah. So it is sort of like this sort of like, I don't know, scenario-based thinking, like thinking in your head what all the possible scenarios are. And then I would even kind of throw in like strategically thinking about what choice to make. Like it could be like a huge benefit or just really nuke you. I don't know. Do you find yourself like going into that type of thinking for better or worse?
I envy you in obviously so many respects, but one of the things that I keep thinking is that you do actually kind of take these leaps, or what seem to me to be like leaps. And I think a lot of it, some of it you touched on, really feels like opportunity cost. So, okay, for the next two, you know, for a period of 2 years, what if I was living in, I don't know, Budapest or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't speak Hungarian. The whole thing sounds weird, but I can imagine thinking, okay, 2 years and 1 day, I'm on a plane back to London or a train or whatever it is in my case. But yeah, I think particularly at, I'm going to say, our age, it feels better to do something than to not do it. I'm not saying, you know, time is pressing, but time is kind of pressing. And I can imagine a situation where one's children say, I do not like the cheese here, or whatever it is, and having to go with that and say, well, you know, this is what cheese is like in America, I'm afraid. So you're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it feels better to do than not to do. And it is. It's definitely a risk, but risk is part of reward. And 2 years in 2 years in London or 2 years in Paris or wherever it is, that could be great. And I think it's reasonable to go into a situation like that expecting it to be great.
Yeah, I like that more succinct way of putting it is like just you should just do things. I mean, I even succincted your succinction, as it were. But it is you want to avoid analysis paralysis. And just leap onto things. Yes. And I guess that is the safety net that I have is like very rarely do I like, and then this goes to the dark side of it, is like very rarely do I do something without like, you know, 30 seconds contemplation of like, is this a good idea?
Yes.
And what could go wrong and what could go good? Or at least I try to think like that. But then on the other hand, it is sort of ironically the same facilities you might have will just kind of like really stop me from doing anything. Cause I'll immediately think about like, that seems like a lot of work. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, there's work is definitely involved.
Yeah. And then the problem is like, as I was talking about this with someone recently is like, it's easy for me to like convince myself that I'm really smart. And I've thought about all of the upsides and the downsides, and therefore we shouldn't do it. When in reality, I'm just being lazy. Like it actually, despite all my intellectualizing, it actually turns out I just don't want to do that thing. Like as an example, I could imagine. Well, this is more or less. I mean, I'm sort of retconning my past, if you will. But you know, I'd never been skiing until this past Christmas, right? And so. My in-laws and my wife decided we were going to go to Taos, New Mexico for skiing. And, you know, a normal person would be like, yay, nice. Exactly. Right. Whereas immediately I'm sort of like, I've never been skiing. We got to go on this trip. Have to get this gear and I don't like doing sports and I got to learn this skiing. And so I'm thinking of like in my mind, like all these things. And, you know, my first reaction for a day or so is like, oh, that seems terrible. And then I finally, like, wake up out of my stupid stupor And I realized like, oh, I need to go do this. This is going to be awesome and fun. And so it is sort of like that little like strategic dude in your head, or I don't know if it's a dudette. I don't really engender the people in my head, I guess. I probably do actually, but, yeah, like, man, it can really like screw you up and make you not want to go skiing of all things.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a something in that of thinking, well, okay, there's going to be 10 events. I am going to imagine that 6 of these events I intend to be good events, and 4 of these events I'm just going to have to deal with. Yeah. And that's going to happen whether you go to that place or not. It's going to happen whether you just stay in bed all day. I mean, there are going to be 6 great things and 4, you know, not that great things. So it's really a question of being in the location you're in. And, you know, again, if I was visiting Austin for even like 2 weeks, I can imagine you saying to me, look, there are these really great things you really need to check out. Forget all those other things and, you know, visit these people, go and do these things and you'll have a great time. And going in with that intention, you know, I'm not talking about pillaging the place, but just knowing enough about someone to think, you should probably concentrate on this and not on that, because there's a lot, particularly in London, that you could really just not do at all.
Yeah. Yeah. See, maybe we've hit on why people don't like the British abroad. You have to specify if you're pillaging or not. Like, nope. This time, not pillaging.
Yeah. No. Definitely not in America.
Just here to see the sights. No pillaging.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I listen to a couple of people who are from Austin on podcasts, and I often think to myself, okay, what would I do there? How would I enjoy myself there? And I know those people would just give me a long list of stuff.
Yes, that's true.
I know you well enough, Robert. That here is a dozen things. Yeah.
You could travel extensively in the hill country. No hovercrafts, but we got pontoon boats, if that's anything.
Well, exactly. I mean, Dan Benjamin's used this phrase as well, hill country. I have no idea what that is. Sounds interesting.
It's very literal. What it means is you're out in the country. Now, I don't know how strong your prediction abilities are, but you're out in the country and there's, I think you would call it rolling hills. Like, you know, there's just hills. And so you like will drive down and up a hill. And so it's hilly, but it's not like, I have to say it's not as, I don't know. To be literal, it's not as green as you might think it is. It's kind of a moist khaki color. Everything's kind of brownish, and every now and then it gets green. But yeah, it's nice. Yeah. You just go out there and hopefully not like burn your ass off with how hot it is.
So, for example, recently I took it into my head that I would like to go walking in somewhere. So I occasionally scoot off and walk in places. So I was in London and I thought, right, I'm going to go to Victoria Station, get a bus to Victoria, get a tube to King's Cross, in King's Cross, buy a train ticket to Edinburgh, get on the train, go to Edinburgh in Scotland, get off the train in Edinburgh, and then get on another train just out into the hills. And there I was in a place called Tweed Bank and just went for a walk. It was really nice and it was possible. I mean, doing that with 3 other people might be a bit more difficult, but these things are doable. And hill country is up there.
I think you just summarized the plot by location of Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere book. You just need Blackfriars and King's Cross in there and you're set.
Yeah.
You know, that's unfortunately, I really like Neil Gaiman, and I watched a BBC version of that book, and now, like, I feel like I don't want to read the book. I've already seen this version of it. Maybe I should go back and read that. Same thing with, like, Stardust. I watched Stardust as a movie, and now I can't really go read that book, but just got to wait for some other book for him to write.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a small question about any possible visit to stay in London. Is there anything in particular that you're worried about?
That I'm worried about. I think.
Or you're really not looking forward to.
No, not really. I mean, I think in general, moving the things I worry about, whether like living a long term abroad, are having to figure out learning the numbers for stuff. Like, you got your you say Celsius or centigrade? I don't even know what it's called. But
Oh, yeah.
everyone's always like, it's 30 degrees, and so I put my shorts on and walk the dog or something, whatever it is. And so you got
Yeah.
that, and then I would have to like learn the price for things. And so that's slightly unnerving. But
Yeah.
I just figured there'd be six, probably not six, there'd probably be 2 months where I'm always pulling out my phone and doing some calculations and being like, golly, that avocado costs $3.
Yeah, but I mean, again, imagine someone coming to stay in Austin for 2 months or something like that. You need to delegate that to the inside of other people's heads.
Oh,
And
yeah.
imagine you knew someone else in London already. Let's call him James. And someone called James would just say, look, don't worry about those things, and do worry about those things. It's that thing of I don't know how to describe it. Imagine someone's learning how to be an artist or something like that. And the best thing a teacher can do is to say what not to worry about. Don't worry about the pastels. Just get some paper and pen and do how you express yourself. What to express yourself. Like again, someone staying in London for a couple of years. You just want to say, someone like me would want to say, hey, you really need to check these things out. You'd really enjoy that. And also to say, yeah, there are going to be some things which are absolutely baffling. And you're just going to have to put them to one side and decide not to worry about them, which is going to be hard.
And I think I don't really have that many hang-ups. The main hang-up that I tend to have is about like language, right? Which in the case of London, not a problem, right? I'll just be the fanciful, crazy American person who says y'all all the time, whatever that means. And I guess that gets to more of like my bigger concern is like the opportunity cost of other places. And is something else better that and would I have had a better time, right? Like so as for example, you read up on say living in or around Berlin, and everyone and it's basically just like woods. I mean, there's a city, and then it's just like Hansel and Gretel shit, probably literally, right? Like, and there's a certain appeal to that, which I guess is interesting. I don't know, but then it's just like, whew, German. I don't, at least it's not Finnish as far as having to learn something. But it does seem like that German, I don't know, that might be kind of interesting to know enough German to be able to get around. Probably give me an interesting perspective on English. But you got that going on, and then German seems cheap. I mean, Germany seems cheaper and things like that. So it really is just more of the old analysis paralysis of things, right? That you have you've got this one. It's kind of the opposite of the 2 year thing, right? Like, while it might end in 2 years, it is also the case that it will end in 2 years. So you would like to choose the if not the best minus one option, right? And have chosen a good one. And I don't know. I mean, I sort of like intellectually know that there's one. Well, there's three things. One, it's really difficult to solve for that problem ahead of time. And then two, you can just go visit and see what it seems like. So you just need to get more input. And then three, to your point, it's like, or you could just decide that it's cool. Like no matter where you are, like your
Or,
brain will
just not.
adapt.
Yeah, definitely. And, if you're in London for a couple of years, you can also be in Berlin for a couple of weeks in that time.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
And yeah, it is definitely easier to get around.
You're saying something that reminded me of one of my favorite little sayings that a friend of mine had. I don't know if you've ever heard him on my other podcast, this guy, Barton George, who I worked with at Dell, and he does the Sputnik laptops and all, Linux on Dell computers. Like who would have thought? And he used to always tell me this phrase when I was seeking free work therapy from him, as I do every now and then. And he said, you know, I really think what you need to do is, and maybe you can translate this for people who aren't, you know, American sports people, not that I am, but he's like, you should be the Michael Jordan of basketball, not the Michael Jordan of baseball, which was always, you know, so, you know.
Yes.
And anyways, like it seemed like a very, you know, one of the things you're alluding to there is like, you need to filter to what it is you can handle and what you're good at and worry about that. And then the other things you can just kind of like,
yes,
shrug your shoulders and slowly back out of the room. You can set up an IFTTT thing where it's like, oh, got a phone call. Gotta go.
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting that it's very interesting that you say that these are things that you should, the word you used is worry. And it was driven home to me recently that whole thing of, hey, you be you, is the only thing you can do. It's the only material you can build with. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got myself into the terrible state I'm in at the moment by worrying about that too much and concerning myself about that too much. But there's a sort of personal equivalent of, I can't remember who talked about the you know, 1,000 fans idea. Was that Seth Godin or someone like that?
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
But that idea that there's an audience for particular people, and then there's the rest of the world, and that's it. It's, you know, you certain situations are going to be fine, and the rest of the world is just there and doesn't need to be coped with and does not need to be worried about at all, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, we should come back to this we should come back to this in a later episode, so I can go have taco night here. But there's another thing that you were saying that was making me think, this sort of like, you know, 9 times out of 10 things are going to be fine, and then there's going to be that one time that is not cool, and you know, you're just going to have that. And I think there's a certain like one might describe that, I think, inaccurately, as like a stoic mindset, right? I think the stoic mindset, not to make it too cynical, but the stoic mindset would be like, there will be an uncountable amount of bad things that happen. And if you don't like it, that's your fucking problem. Right? Like that seems to be their general, I guess that's what you get when one of your main leaders of philosophy is a slave, is sort of like you cope with that. Now, I always thought it was really weird that, like, on the opposite end, on the opposite end, you get your Marcus Aurelius, who's an emperor, which maybe is like a statement on how little power an emperor has, but there should be a more thorough study of that guy. That would be a fun person to go meet if you're in a time machine, just to see what's going on there. Of course, you'd have to learn Latin, I guess, which maybe that's easier than German. I should look into that. But
we both know Latin.
You and me?
We're men of the world.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. It would be a curiosity. I bet linguist people talk about this. Probably some algorithm you could use. Ask Alexa to do it. But like, I wonder what ancient languages, like, you would encounter someone who is a native speaker of it, and you could like speak 21st century English at them, and they would kind of know what you were saying. Like, it's a close enough language that they could get along with it. I wonder if any of that exists. But point being that I was making.
Yeah, it's like chilling out with Chaucer.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe that guy would know what you were saying, and vice versa. I bet Chaucer would be a lot more enjoyable with a bunch of hand waving. Kind of like hand signals to figure things out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably been sitting there and reading.
Just before you go, I know you're very, very insistent on Computer Corner. So, is there any computer type tips that you have for me personally this evening?
Well, that's funny you should raise that, because before I figured out what we were going to talk about today, or before we figured out, I should say, I was thinking, you know, this whole podcast is going to be Computer Corner, but we managed not to talk about computer stuff. So,
yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think here's my Computer Corner for the day. Now, as I say that, and as I am speaking now, I am madly in my head thinking of what it shall be. which is a technique. We can also we can have that be in the podcast tip, unmute the mic episode. How to come up with answers quickly by talking a lot.
I've got a broad question actually that you may have a view on.
Okay, and then we'll get back to the computer corner.
Oh no, this is a computer.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thinking about kids between say 10 and 15. Mm. iOS or macOS?
Ooh, that's a good question right there. You know, I am not one of these Frederiki whatnot guys who's like, I got to make slides, right? And like, I don't know about, yeah. I don't know if you've ever tried to publish a podcast on an iPad, but that shit ain't happening, right? So there are, I think the distinction that Cory Doctorow like predictively made a while ago, remember when iOS was coming out and he was like, oh, no one will ever be able to create anything ever again. Which just like that guy. Speaking yeah. of a Londoner expat, I guess. But like, I think that's pretty much true for the iPad. Is like, if you want to create things on the iPad, you basically need to turn it into a laptop. Like, you can get an external keyboard, you can get a little stand for it, you can get an adapter so you can have storage on it. Like, on and on and on, right? Now that said. I mean, I feel like iOS is what it should be. And the reason I say that
I agree.
The reason I say that is because I think there will always be macOS and laptops. Like I think it's easier to figure out how a desktop works from puttering around on an iOS device. And I also think I think a long time ago, this is another little revelation, and then I'll cut off my footnoting here of proof. But like, I remember I was complaining on this topic to someone many, many years ago, and I said like, "Here's the use case to prove that like tablets or iOS or whatever is not good enough is like try to book a business trip, right? Like, because when I book a business trip,
oh boy,
like you got to have your calendar open, you got to have that weird email and these notes you had, and then you're in your expensing system, and all, you got all this stuff." And they made a good point, which has not really been solved yet, which is like, oh, well, someone just needs to write a better app for it. Like, that's all it means is no one's written a good app for it yet, which I think is valid. Like, Concur, which I use, could not easily, but it would be possible for them to make an app that sort of like behaved like I thought travel booking should. But I don't know. I don't think they do. And then also, it's just like, iOS is nice and it's more portable and... I mean, I think it would do pretty much everything you wanted it to.
Yeah, my feeling, particularly with people of that age, you know, 15 down to 10, is that I could sit there and talk about the terminal on the Mac or something like that, but it would be whatever. And some of the Mac stuff, some of the Mac stuff feels like too late. And some of the iOS stuff feels like too early, but too early feels better for someone of that age than too late. Yeah.
No,
and it's what they're used to already.
And I think, I mean, you could program on iOS. Like, you can have a terminal on there. You can do all of these things. Yeah. It's just a matter of, I mean, my sense, not being a 10 to 15 year old anymore, is my sense is like, I just find it easier, like mechanically, so to speak. And, intellectually, to do a lot of the things on the laptop, because like I know how to do it on the laptop really well, and I've done it for so many years. But my feeling is that if I had grown up using something like an iOS stuff, it would probably be weirder to use it on the desktop, right? Like, what's this menu bar with all these fiddly little things in it? And like, is this? Nowadays they have a file system on tablets, but like, what is this file based way of doing things? And like, how come I've got to do that, Syracusian lining up of all the windows? like it's almost, I feel like maybe it's similar to back in our day, as it were, the debate people would have between Windows and whatever they called Apples back then, like Macs. And the idea was that on Windows, you could configure yourself to death. Like, you could just configure yourself into terribleness and do whatever you wanted. And on the Mac, there was less configurability, but it just had these opinions about the best way of doing things. And so you would just do things that way.
Yeah.
And like now Mac OS is like the Windows thing where you can just like do whatever relative. Actually, you can just kind of do whatever. Whereas the iOS is like when I use a split screen thing, there are two modes to split screens. One, it's on a very narrow column on the side of your tablet, or it's half and half. And as long as you want one of those, you can arrange your windows any way you like. But it turns out to be nice.
Yeah, I do like it. And I use, this is for another episode, but I use various things on the iPad, like Pythonista, which is just amazing. Mm. And there's something about iOS which reminds me of OpenDoc, that idea of starting with a document rather than starting with an application. And I know that's not absolutely the case, but there just feels like enough of that to be the beginning of something else.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna keep on going with the kid stick with iOS. Don't worry about the desktop. It's changing. The iOS thing is the bit that's changing quickly.
Yeah.
Go ahead with that. And, go ahead with learning that.
And then my last comment on this, and then I did figure out a computer corner thing really quick to have my own. And I think the other way in trying to be a cool dad, the thing I would try to weigh, the one of the ways I would try to weigh it was, one, if you want a laptop and that's what you want, we'll get you a laptop. Right. But if you have no opinion and I'm trying to groom you, I would assume that everyone thinks like iPads are cooler, right? If only because they're more expensive. So you must be better because you have more money to pay for things. And so what do they call that? It's like it has a Veblen good thing to it. Like there's a lot of signaling that goes on even nowadays, even though everyone has one with an Apple product, right? Like I imagine if your kid like showed up with a iPhone 10 or X or whatever, people would be like, "Ooh, you got the notch, fancy pants," right? And you know, one side would say that you're pretentious and whatever, but most everyone would be like, "Ooh, you must be something special." And so it's like a double bagger of like you have potentially the better computing device, and then also you've got cachet that goes with it.
Yeah.
So that's what my and then you would end up being a cool dad. That's all we really want, as I recall.
I'm still working on that.
So here's my brief computer corner. Now there's an app. I like to read a lot of books. Speaking of kids on tablets, I read all my books basically. This is not, let's say I read 99%. I was going to say 98, but I might read like 10 pages of actual three-dimensional text a year nowadays. So I read all my books on my iOS devices. And I always get worried that my kids see me reading and they think that I'm just like, you know, playing Pokemon Go or farting around. And I want to be like, this is some fucking quality time. I'm reading a goddamn book. I'm not just staring at a screen, but whatever. As if reading a book is like, you know, not farting around instead of engaging with the world, but never mind that. But there's a site that Amazon bought a long time ago that, you know, I was cool enough to use before it was acquired, called Goodreads. And it fits that, I don't know if people say knolling anymore, but it fits this thing of like, for anyone who cares about what Tinderbox is and things like that, like it not only will catalog the books you've read and when you've read them, but if you're really on it, you can actually save your progress like every time. So people who follow my thing will see that like, oh, yesterday he was 2% done with this book, and today he's 2.5% done. Congrats! And you know they can do a little, but but it's nice because you can catalog like every book that you've read, and then I realized recently that instead of maintaining an Amazon wish list, I should use the want to read category in Goodreads, and I was thinking Amazon owns this company, surely there's a way to import this list. And it's not very good, but there is. You can import your list over and migrate it. So I think it's nice. And as long as you don't do the thing that I did many years ago and still had to correct myself from, where you just add everyone as a friend or someone you follow in your contact book.
That's bad.
Yeah, I'm still chopping away at that underbrush. But I've got it at a good thing where there's actual people I care about and I can see books that they're reading that are interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to take another look at Goodreads, because yeah. I haven't looked at that for some time, and we will definitely have to talk about reading on little screens.
Oh, reading on little screens is the best. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a good app for Goodreads, and it actually has finally, in the last 18 months, there's pretty, not as good as it could be, but there's pretty tight integration into the Kindle app, which is
kind of
amazing.
Oh, I have lots of questions.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. And just let me, just so that you have a smooth time, right? Like your London advice. When you initially go to the Goodreads site, you are going to be horrified by like their design and their layout and all sorts of things. But be the Michael Jordan of cataloging which books you've read, and don't worry about the surrounding. You got to ease into it. It'll be fine.
Actually, that does actually remind me of a short thing that I have an indexer I should introduce you to.
Mm. An indexer. Is that like a Roomba?
Indexing, big thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That is nice. I know you have lots of indexing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh,
well,
man.
Enjoy the tacos.
I need an index. Yeah, I will enjoy the tacos. That's nice. I got a new taco seasoning mix with no sugar in it, so I'll live longer.
Oh, like the bacon.
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly like the bacon. I verified that recently. It is indeed a fact that there is no salt in the Costco low sodium bacon. If I do end up moving abroad, it's clear I'm going to have to go get a big suitcase and load it full of Kirkland low sodium bacon, and hopefully it'll survive the 12-hour trip.
Yes, and we have our own Euro bacon that they enjoy.
I bet. You know, that is maybe one thing to look forward to, is you probably could verify this and take a screenshot of it to share with me. But my understanding is that there are regulations in the U.S. which prevent you from making true English sausage. And that being that an English sausage, there's a little bit more like fat than meat, which you can't do in the U.S. and call it sausage. And that explains why when I travel abroad, the breakfast sausage tastes so different in a good way. But
I think this is one of those kind of, you know, people would have a list of things they want to do when they go and visit Paris. Yes. I want to go and see the Eiffel Tower. You should have a list of, you know, stuff that you really want to do, like sausages.
Uh-huh.
Sausages, _, and just like really go for it.
Yeah, I like it. That would be good. Yeah.
It's going to be great.
That's right. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
See ya.